Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Back goes Olinsky. They run a stunt. Pressure delivers downfield. Intercepted at the 20. Jair Brown 30. 35 40. Jair Brown midfield. And flag goes down, as does Brown at the 46. And another flag comes in. Clifford, play action fake, delivers, Strange to the 10 to the 5, leaps into the end zone, touchdown, Penn State. Gordon sets up left wing, low snap, loose of the turf, they scramble, Penn State's around it, Nittany Lions say they have it, and indeed they do. Penn State recovers at the Northwestern 45-yard line. Makes the pitch, back to pass, dumps it off to Singleton, 25-20, Singleton to the 15, inside the 15 and down at the 13-yard line in the Del Grosso Sauce red zone for the first time today. First and goal at the 2, Singleton to the right, lowers the shoulder, drives toward the goal line, touchdown Penn State, Nicholas Singleton, his fifth rushing touchdown of the year, and the Nittany Lions with 5:02 to go in the half, lead at 13-0. Well, if he hadn't stumbled, he goes a long way. They ruled him down at the 30 on the stumble. Play action, Olinsky. Pressure, hit, fumbles the football. They're around it, the Nittany Lions at the 35. Penn State recovers. Curtis Jacobs. The Penn State defense does it again. The second time today, they've reciprocated a takeaway with one of their own. Play action fake, Clifford steps up in the pocket, loads it up, long and deep, Parker Washington, got it to 40, 35 and down to the 30-yard line of Northwestern and a first down. Good snap, put down. Kick by Pinniger's up, the kick by Pinniger is good, and Penn State leads it 17-7, 14:29 to play. Last kneel down, that's it. Penn State's 5-0 going to the bye week. It may not have been a work of art, but it's a 17-7 win for the Nittany Lions today.
And good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a 5-0 victory Monday. It wasn't pretty, but it'll do, as they say. Mackie Trillo here with you. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Humbles Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great selection of pre-owned inventory, and a sales staff that is there for you, not just there for the sale, and a service department that is there with the diagnostics, the inspections, the routine maintenance, all part of the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And that service department is looking for some more technicians, looking for entry-level and experienced technicians to work in the quick lane, car light truck service, heavy truck service, body frame and alignment and towing departments. Whether you got experience, you're an entry-level technician looking for your first job, or you're just looking for a career change, they'd love to hear from you. Stop by in person, apply online at sunburymotors.com, or call Todd at 286-7746. And every Monday show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, or go to purdyinsurance.com. Home, auto, life, business insurance, all that you need, they've got you covered. They are the true pros pros when it comes to insurance matters, the Purdy's are. And it's all Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, or go to purdyinsurance.com. We got a busy start to this week. Today, we got Ryan Snyder to talk some recruiting from On3. Then we've got Frank Bodani from the York Daily Record at 4:06 to recap the win on Saturday against Northwestern. And Dave Cicchini, of course, is back with us, head coach of Bucknell. Tough loss for the Bison on Saturday for homecoming, what was a rainy homecoming like it was rainy football weekend, losing to Lafayette 24-14. So that's today's show. Tomorrow, we got Mike Gesicki. And be interesting to hear from him based on everything around this team the last couple of weeks with Tua. We've got Neil Coulong tomorrow. And we have Glenn Mack now from the Eagles Radio Network at 4:35 tomorrow. So we're off to a big bang to start the week here on the Steve Jones Show. And, of course, as always, if you miss anything from our shows, always check it out at stevejonesshow.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Links are always available on the Twitter and Facebook pages so you don't miss a beat of anything. As far as the game goes on Saturday, of course, I was at Bucknell, so I went back and looked at the tape from the Penn State game on Saturday. Obviously, five turnovers is not what you're looking for. It's ugly. All of them were. But when I saw the reports that it was raining an inch per hour, basically, and it got worse as the game went along at State College, and of course that rain came here to Lewisburg for Bucknell, you knew that the probability of turnovers happening were going to be pretty high for both sides. And obviously Northwestern had three, Penn State has five. The ones that be more bothersome to me are probably the ones where
you know what? No, I not one time did I bring up weather as a reason for turnovers.
Sorry. Oh yeah, it still can happen, right? But
and today I'm not going to. Penn State practices. Now, look, if it's really raining out, they go inside. I mean, you do have to have a productive practice. I mean, let's be honest. You do have to have that. But they practice in wind. And James tells me, he says, look, football's a game that's played in conditions. We need to practice out here. Now, you do it to a point because you don't want to obviously wipe, you know, you can't wipe out an entire practice because, you know, you do segments in the wind. You do segments when there are showers. Because you want them to get used to, like, hey, look, you have to execute. Can't drop the ball. Can't put it on the ground. Can't, you know, there's a lot of things you can't do. And so what you do is you know, James will have them when the weather isn't great. He will still take them out for a period or two outside to practice in the conditions. Because you can get concerned about days like Saturday. So they've been through it. They know that. They understand that. Got to hold on to the ball. Got to hold on to the ball. Okay? And that's the bottom. I understand if a helmet hits, I mean, you know, that does happen. But they had not fumbled the ball once or lost a fumble once in four games. And they only had one interception in four games. That was it. So, yeah, conditions, eh. See, the conditions play a big role in, for example, the kicking game. And yet Penn State's kicking operation was totally clean on Saturday. Chris Stahl, every snap on the money. Punt, extra point, field goal. Pinniger, 2 for 2 extra points, knocked home his field goal. Barney dropped in punts. Penn State, I thought, for the most part, with the exception of maybe one, but I can understand why. You know, Jack and I thought Parker Washington could have run up and caught one of them. For the simple reason of, you know, it would have saved 15, 20 yards. But discretion of the better part of valor. I got it. Okay. And, you know, and kickoffs, they fielded them cleanly and did fair catches. I mean, special teams is what you worry about in a day like that. Handle it. No problem. So you got to hang on to the ball. And it's just the way it is. Got to hang on to it. And I know it, you know. So I never really got into the conditions of it. I just felt that you had to get to the lead and play with the lead in a game like that, which they did. And then what gets me is the five turnovers in the game. You know how many yards Northwestern had after the five takeaways? Eight. They had a total of 8 yards after takeaways. Wow. That's something else. That's great quick change defense right there. That's outstanding. So, yeah. And a good day for the Eagles yesterday. I mean, the team that's had the first overall pick in the NFL draft the last 2 years, they beat really good. So, what? No? Not the right way to look at it?
Well, he played like a rookie yesterday with five turnovers himself, but...
No, he did not play well. He did not play well. He did not even remotely, I'm talking about Trevor Lawrence, did not even remotely play the way he did against the Chargers. Not even close. But explain to me, and I'm going to ask Glenn this when we get... Is Glenn on the show today?
He's tomorrow.
What the heck are you going for it on fourth down with a 7-point lead? Or whatever the score was at the time. Kick the field goal. What are you doing?
That's kind of what I was thinking myself.
Thinking? It doesn't take much thought at all. We're seeing all these decisions left and right. Where I sit back and go, what are you doing? Okay? I want to point out something that may be shocking to people. We've watched people caught off guard defensively on fourth down plays for a couple of years, right? Guess what everybody starts to do? Defensive coordinators aren't dumb. They are now starting to chart all your fourth down plays, and they're practicing against it. Kind of takes away the... Because part of this is a little bit by surprise. Like, oh, at first, when this first started happening, are they going to go for it? Everybody scrambles, and you're getting... Now you're noticing the fourth down conversion rate. What's it doing of late?
What's happening? Down.
Yeah. Why? Oh, I don't know. Those darn defensive coordinators are now practicing against it. You can't do that. You're not allowed. But that's what's happening. Teams are better prepared for your fourth down plays now. But I don't understand why people are losing the concept of time and score. I don't understand that. I'm baffled by the concept of time and score. And because I don't mind guys going for it on fourth down. Fine by me. I think, you know, it's fun. It's exciting. Strategically, I think it a lot of times it works. Not a lot of times, but I mean, it's working less. But, so, I mean, you listen to the broadcast. I don't sit there and go, well, I don't know about this. No. Far from it. But I'm not watching other games. And I saw some bizarro stuff over the weekend. Bizarre. We'll talk about that in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Yeah, Devin Ford is no longer on the team. He decided that he wanted to focus on academics. And we wish him the best. I think you guys know I praised Devin Ford for 4 years. I had a ton of respect for him. And I wish him nothing but the best.
Okay, that was James after the game on Saturday on Devin Ford. So now let's get into what I actually wanted to talk to because I tried to set it up that way, Matt. I didn't really, I mean, it's adorable you played that, but it had nothing to do with what I wanted to talk about. Do you listen to the show?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then I didn't want to play that. All right, so maybe later, but not now. I mean, it's like, you know. I wanted to talk about decisions I saw over the weekend. The John Harbaugh one's obvious. Okay? I'm totally baffled. You don't get there in the postgame and say, because I trusted my defense, I made that move. No, if you trusted your defense, you'd have kicked the field goal and taken the lead. Now I trust my defense to protect it. Weird. Weird. You need points. Okay? I don't get it. And then I'm watching Washington and UCLA. What was the other one? Oh, yeah, and your guy, Sirianni. We're going for it on fourth down when I can kick a field goal late to make it a two-score game? What are we doing here?
Are you talking about when it was 23-14?
Does anybody know how to count? It was 29-21 or whatever it was.
Oh, so like, late in the game, yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Okay, time, score. How many possessions does the opponent have left? Nick? Oh, I don't know. Not enough to win the game if I kick the field goal. Come on. You're going to back that up? Really?
No, I wanted to as well, but now, granted...
It makes no sense. I'm sorry. There's no common sense with it. Zero. Unless Elliott's hurt. If Elliott's hurt, then I'm with it. If he's not hurt, you got to kick. You got to do... You're trying to make it a 10-point game. Like, two possessions. Done.
I think it was part of
finished.
It plus the weather.
Oh, knock it off.
I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm just telling you what I heard from the broadcast.
Oh,
that's all.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
I'm not saying I agree with it either. I would have kicked it.
Field goal.
Yeah, I agree.
God, we're being populated by analytics stuff. Well, analytics says, no, here's one. If it's two possessions and there's 3 minutes left, I'm going to win the game.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I would have kicked the field goal, too. I didn't get it.
Sorry, it's like, come on. We can't do romper room stuff as a coach here. Then I'm watching Washington, UCLA. It's 33-10. There's 4.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. So there's only been two possessions. UCLA scored to make it 33-10. Then Washington put together a nice drive, 33-16. He goes for two. You're running out of possessions, Kalen.
The weather is getting cooler and the leaves are changing in central PA. Hi, this is Season from Purdy Insurance. If your current agent is falling short, it's time to give Purdy Insurance a call. We're a local, family-owned independent agency ready to find the right insurance to fit your needs. You can call us at 570-286-5855, stop in our office on Market Street in Sunbury, or head to our website at purdyinsurance.com to find out what we can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yeah, I watched some of that Shikellamy-Shamokin game the other night. Some of the fourth quarter. Who does Shikellamy have this week? I mean, I know Kevin just said it, and I didn't.
Let's see here. They have Mifflinburg this week, right?
Okay. Interesting.
That's a tough game.
Yeah, interesting. We're going to get to Ryan Snyder in a moment. The John Harbaugh thing was mystifying. Because not only that, but like the play they called, too, was kind of bizarre. And not only that, it ends up being intercepted. So instead of Buffalo starting at the 2... they started the 20. Like, I just sat there and went, what are you doing? You take the points, take the lead. You've had everything going against you in the second half. You finally have a chance to go back in front. Do it, because it's going to be a lift for everybody, and force them to do something. Right? To be honest with you, when you do something like that and you miss it, you're not forcing them to do anything. Now, the worst you're going to get out of it is, in all likelihood, overtime. Right? And then I want to go back for a moment to the Washington-UCLA game. So let's do some math here. And again, when you look at it, okay, UCLA's played great. They lead 26-10 at halftime. Okay? DTR, Dorian Thompson-Robinson's playing a terrific game at quarterback. No getting around it. Okay? They start the second half with the ball. They put together like a five-and-a-half-minute drive. Boom, knock it in. And they're up 33-10. All right. So it's a 23-point game. They march down the field. Washington, to its credit, with Michael Penix, the quarterback, do a really good job, score. But it takes them about 4.5 minutes plus. Now it's like 4.5 minutes left in the third quarter. So now you've got more than two-thirds of the third quarter gone. And you've got to score to make it 33-16. So you're down 17 points. Now, I've got to be sitting there looking at the clock, and I'm saying to myself, okay, how many possessions are left in the game? Like, okay, that's called analytics too, boys and girls. How many possessions are left in the game? So I kicked the extra point there. Why? Because it's a 95-97% make, as opposed to a 51-49, 52-48 make on a two, which has a higher point value, but a lower probability of doing it. They missed the two-point conversion. That means that you have now taken 4.5 to 5 minutes of the game, and you started your possession down three possessions, correct? You missed the two-point conversion, and guess what? I literally gained no ground on possessions. I'm still down three possessions. See my point, Matt? I am still down three possessions in the game.
Yep,
I literally gained no ground. None. Right? Now, if I cut it to 16, for example, maybe I'd think about going for 2 points at that point, okay? And I've already got it to two possessions. You know, you need two scores out of the... Notice I don't say it's a two-score game. No. It's a two-possession game, because if you need a touchdown and a two-point conversion, you need two scores on the possession to do it. Okay? But I'm sitting there like going, what are we doing here? You want to cut down the number of possessions you need, because if I can now cut down the number of possessions, which or now gives me a better shot at getting an extra possession, that extra possession might be an overtime, but it gives me a better shot at getting it. By going for two and missing it, guess what I've done? I'm still down three possessions. I'm no better off than I was before in terms of the number of possessions needed to win the game or give me a chance to win. That's a lot. See, it's stuff like that where I sit back and go, no. Not the right spot. You got to be able to say time and score. All right, what does time and score tell me what I need to do decision-making? I've just watched over 10 minutes of the clock evaporate, and each team had a possession. Yikes. How many do I have left in the game based on how this game's playing out? What's my worst-case scenario? I might only have a couple left. I better kick the extra point here that gets me down so I need and have a shot with those two possessions to do it. Instead, he went for two, didn't make it, and now he's still three possessions behind. You've got to use some quick common sense as to what time and score and number of possessions mean, and he didn't do that. He's a good coach. But that does enter into it, and it's not just what the card says. Stop saying, well, the card says. I don't care what the card says. I'm looking up. I got 4.5 minutes to go in the third quarter. Each team's only had the ball once. Okay, how many possessions do I have left in the game? If I kick an extra point, now I've at least got it down to two possessions. And didn't do it. That's what I'm talking about. To me, that's analytics too. The ability to look at time and score as to what your decision needs to be based on number of possessions remaining. That's also analytics. So, and your guy Sirianni, you're defending him to the hilt. I got it. I know. It's like, you know, he's the greatest things in sliced bread. I got it. The whole thing. You kick the. Now, Elliott may be hurt. Okay.
Well, he definitely was not 100%.
Right. He got belted on that one field goal. He got belted. So if that's the case, I'm all for going for it on fourth down. I get it. But if he's able to do it, I mean, the guy's missed one field goal all year. Come on.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was. That's why I was kind of 50-50 about it, because we didn't know exactly what his health condition was.
Right. Now, and just explain that after the game. It's okay. But that's not how they explained it. And I look at something like that. If he's hurt, I got it. So, right? And we can have this discussion with complete rationality because it didn't hurt the Eagles at all in the game. They won. I mean, and after falling behind in that game, they were clearly the better team. Right? And Hurts is playing at a great level. Miles had a great day. Fabulous. Right? So you can have this discussion and have some rationality to it because it didn't hurt them in the least. Didn't hurt them at all. It wasn't like it was a decision that cost them the game or anything like that. But it's a decision that if Elliott's good enough to go, the common sense of again, time and score, number of possessions, I can give myself a 2-possession advantage based on the time remaining. I need to take that. See the logic of that?
Oh, yeah,
and again,
absolutely.
And again, it's no big deal because they won the game. They're clearly the better team. So you can have this discussion, and it's no big deal because guess what? It had zero factor in the game at all. The time you got to worry about it is if it does become a factor because you make a decision like that. And believe me, you listen to the broadcast. How often do you hear me complain about going for it on fourth down or question it? No, I get how today's game's played. But like, I'm looking at a couple common sense things where it doesn't quite add up to me, or the ability to go for a 2 doesn't add up to me because I'm looking at... Because remember, in basketball, Dick and I are always talking... 4 minutes left. How many possessions are left in this game? And how do you need to play it? And that's what I'm thinking now with football. How many possessions are left? How do I need to play it? That's why I question the Washington coach not kicking the extra point the other night, because now I need to cut down the number of possessions remaining to give myself a shot. Okay. Take a break. No, I don't take a break. We're going to bring in Ryan Snyder. On3.com, Blue White Illustrated. We're going to talk recruiting here with one of the best in the business. Ryan, great to have you back.
You mentioned Dave Sims. He's like the most underrated play-by-play guy,
I think. He's so good.
He's such a good guy.
I mean, I've known Dave for 30 years. I mean, maybe 35.
Yeah, I was just watching him on MLB Network a little bit ago. They were doing his play-by-play call, the home run they had to get the playoff the other night. And I think he's so underrated.
He is really underrated, you know. It wasn't obviously the best of days, but what kind of turnout did they have on the recruiting side over the weekend?
Well, considering it was a monsoon, I don't know. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
It was about 20 or so, we'll say, true Division I prospects. You know, guys that probably not all of them are going to end up at a school like Penn State, but, you know, guys that will play at anywhere between a Temple to a Rutgers to a Maryland. You know, so that's not too bad of a showing. Out of the guys that are true Penn State level, I would say there is about, not including the committed players, you'd say about 7, 8, 9, something like that. And the original list was expected to be around a dozen, you know, a couple top guys decided not to drive in that rain. And it's hard to say I could blame them, especially they're coming from like South Jersey and Maryland, D.C., you know, where it was just a downpour the whole way to get there. So, you know, considering the weather and all that, it wasn't too bad. You know, Penn State had Jameel Lyons and Joey Schlafler and Javen Williams all back. Of course, they're committed guys. A few notables, too. Nyjer Daniels is a really good-looking 2024 offensive lineman, 6'7", 250, or 350, excuse me. They're trying to clearly get bigger on the offensive front. And, you know, having Nyjer was up as big as another offensive lineman, Juan Minaya, too. Another really good-looking player. I think he's like 6'5"-ish, 320, a little bit smaller. But, you know, two true offensive tackle prospects. And that's clearly going to be a focus. You know, they'd love to get another one for 2023. that'll clearly be a focus for 2024 as well. So some top guys, and you know, they'll all focus now to Minnesota. Really, that's going to be the big one.
Right. Yeah. Obviously, with once they get to that game. What about a 2023 running back? Because we all know what the situation. They love the one that has verbal to them, but mm-hmm. we all know that he's been banged up. So, is there an idea of getting another one there?
They're certainly looking. You know, I'll be curious to see how it kind of plays out. Right now, I would say Chris Johnson is a player to keep an eye on. Out of I think it's Dillard in Florida. I think he's going to have interest in coming up for a visit, but I would probably have to lean towards Miami at the moment as far as you know, the school who should be considered the favorite. We have him at 5'11", 178. He's a four-star prospect, right around the top 300 or so. There's real interest with Sider, and of course they got to get him on campus though. I mean, that's how it is.
Right.
Really, with all these Florida guys, man, you got to get them up. And for the most part, it's hard for them to visit if it's not an official visit either. So if they can set that for maybe Minnesota or Ohio State, you know, you'll never rule anything out. But really, I mean, Chris is the only one who's really – we know Penn State has interest in, and then obviously we know he has interest as well. But, you know, what do we got, 3 more months here until anyone can sign? So we'll see if anything shakes out. But obviously with Devin Ford – no longer in the part of the program, and then you have Nick Singleton, and you have the young guys emerging. I mean, not saying Kevon's going to leave, but you never know within the transfer portal era. It certainly makes sense to try and add another running back if you can.
All right, so that when you look at where they are with 23 right now, how many more openings do they potentially have before, was it December 15th, I think, is going to mm-hmm. be the early signing day?
Mm-hmm. So I think three is they can safely do, right? You can get to 23 and it doesn't cause too many headaches. But in the world of recruiting, you know, what's a signing day without a headache or two, right?
So, sure.
You know, I'm hesitant to push 23 too much because, as we see every year, once you get those coaching changes, you get a few top players starting to think things over again, and you know, Penn State gets an opportunity to add a 24th. And say it's at a maybe not a key position, but the player's too good
sure.
to pass up.
Right,
you got to add them. I mean, we see Penn State do this pretty regularly throughout the year. So I think 23 is the safe number. I think 24 is possible. I think 25 would be starting to stretch it a bit. But of course, in the transfer portal era, you never know who's all going to leave, and if they had a large number of guys leaving, you know, at the end of November, early December. That kind of changes everything. But then, of course, you gotta get guys in on the portal too. So it's hard to do the math, as you know, Steve. But yeah. I think 23, 24 is the most realistic number at the moment.
Okay. So when you look at James Franklin, on Friday, for example, we know he choppered out of here. He also went to games. Track him. Where, you know, how did he spend his Friday?
How did he spend his Friday? He spent his Friday bouncing all over PA, a couple spots down in Malvern. There's a really good player committed, Peter Jones. He's committed to Notre Dame. He got to stop in Malvern. You know, they're going to stay on Peter no matter what. So that was an important stop. I also saw Joey Schlafler in Exeter. So bouncing around a couple schools from that Lancaster down towards Philly area. I think there was maybe one or stop. I'm not thinking off the top of my head. And then he also went up to Erie then to see Cooper Cousins, who's, you know, a really important 2024 player who's already, of course, committed to them. So James has been out on the road, I think, every Friday now. I believe he's done. Let's see, he saw Johnny Shakir in New Jersey. He saw Quentin Martin out in Pittsburgh. He was when they were down in Alabama. They checked up on Dakari Nelson, who's of course is committed to them. There's one other one I think I'm missing off the top of my head, but they've been out on the road every week, and of course with the bye week coming up, this is when the entire staff will hit the road. So I'm still working to put together that list. I'm hoping to have it up here in the next day or two, and you know, we'll have everybody covered over at BWI. But I would expect Wednesday to Saturday for pretty much the entire staff to be on the road. Some will come back Saturday, but. I shouldn't say the entire staff Wednesday to Saturday. The entire staff will be more Friday, maybe early Thursday. Right. But you'll have some here Wednesday and some here Saturday, you know, for practices and things like that.
How does it look right now in terms of starting to build, obviously, 24 at this point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they don't have a lot of commitments, but, man, they have a ton of guys who I would say they sit top three with. And now, of course, it's really early. I don't want to say top three, and, you know, I don't want to overthink it, I guess, it's so long to go. But there's a lot of guys that have a ton of interest, a lot of top players, too. And I just mentioned Quinton Martin. I've had people say that he's the best prospect to come out of Pennsylvania since Micah Parsons. So obviously that's a big name there. And, you know, he's a guy that I totally expect Penn State to be in the mix with as well. I think the region, the one thing I would say is the region is setting up to be one of the best in recent years. I think I did the math not that long ago. We're setting up for about 40 or so four-star prospects throughout the Mid-Atlantic region. Of course, those numbers will change. It might dip into the high 30s. But just compared throughout Franklin's tenure here, I believe there's only one other year. I think it was around 2018 or so, you know, which is of course, was Penn State's last massive class until last year. We saw those kind of numbers as far as that depth of four-star talent. So there's a lot of guys to pick and choose from. I would say that there's two guys right now, Dominic Nichols, the defensive end from Maryland, and an offensive lineman, Kevin Haywood, out of Archbishop Wood outside of Philadelphia. Those two guys, I feel like they're firmly leaning towards Penn State. I feel pretty confident in saying that at minimum, Penn State's going to be one of two schools they choose between. I think they should both end up here, though, and maybe it could be before the end of the year closes out. So I look at next year's class as their next opportunity to have a really massive class, because we're seeing five-star players and we're seeing high-end four-stars. And if you want to have a top-10 class, which we saw last year with Penn State, you got to get a couple five stars in there, or it's just kind of hard to crack when you have all those other powerhouse schools getting a couple. So the talent is there for 2024. Like I said, Quinton's going to be a five star. It's going to be a couple others, and then a bunch of top 100, top 150 guys. Let's see how it shakes out here as well. And of course, the other thing I'll mention is, like, fans are always trying to put together the board, right? Who's the top tight ends? Who's the top running backs? Who's the top whatever? We'll know so much more in 2.5 months from now.
Yes.
Once all that film comes through, once James and his staff are able to evaluate, I always tell people, beginning of January, once we get past this early signing period and get past the bowl game, that's when we can really sit down and figure out who their top 2024 guys are. There's a lot of offers that are out there, but some of those guys are going to fall off, and then other offers are going to go out. So give us about 2 months or so, and we'll really be able to lock down who those top guys are at this top position.
Ryan, Penn State's been – this will be the last question because I know you have to run. But Penn State's been investing more in the locker room, the weight mm-hmm. room, things like that. And they've been very public about doing that and the money that's been put into it. Student athletes have a wide variety of reasons why they select someplace, and sometimes it's good enough to be just even with somebody else. Is that making a difference for them in recruiting what they're investing in?
I'm hearing guys talk about it more and more.
Yeah, okay.
We're hearing NIL more and more too, which is great for Penn State, because that was an issue. James was open about it just a handful of months ago, and things are really starting to head in a positive direction.
And Dan Cabal and Andy Frank have made great inroads there. So
I was just going to give those guys a shout out too, man. They've done a great job, and of course all the people starting collectives and whatnot. I mean, that just these guys deserve a lot of credit, because this was a situation where 8 months ago, I'm not saying people were pushing the panic button, but they were certainly making it clear that there were some concerns. So I think obviously facilities and all that stuff are incredibly important. Penn State obviously just did a great job with the last building. They're going to continue doing it too. I mean, James has made it clear they're never going to be done. And, if you look at the Texas A&M facility, the Texas Tech facility, I mean, anyone who's seen Georgia's knows there's a lot to catch up to in this world. I feel like that's in a good spot. That's going to be there. It's still NIL, because I can throw numbers out there. I don't know any numbers that are accurate, but just we'll say a couple million, right? Well, that's never going to be good enough. You're going to need a couple million more and couple million more after that. It's just the world we're in now. So I think the most important thing is that all those things are in motion. The recruits are seeing that. And for the first time in a long time, it's not just about family atmosphere and academics, which obviously, yes, it's incredibly important. I don't want to overlook that stuff.
Right. It's all
but
part
that
of
was,
it.
That was always the message, though,
yes.
Right? It was always just like, they recruit me harder than everyone else. They have a family. They have great academics. And you need to sell those three things. But guess what? if you want to get those five-star guys, you got to sell a whole lot more than that, too. Yeah. And that's kind of what we're seeing more and more now. This class now, 2023, 2024, and probably a little bit into 2025 are going to be massively important for NIL. You know, I'm kind of a person that thinks that hopefully by 2025, 2026, we get this more of an even playing field, or you know, things get sorted out where it's not just the wild, wild west. Mm-hmm. But I still think we have another class or two where that's just going to be the reality, and you got to do everything you can to keep up with everyone else.
Great perspective as always. Ryan, thank you so much. Appreciate you so much, and thanks so much for the time.
Of course. Whiteout Week will catch up with me then. We got a lot to discuss here in a couple
weeks. Yes, we do. Right. Thank you so much.
Later. Take care, Steve.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.